A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 137. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about Frankenstein. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
We are this time talking about the 2007 ITV version of Frankenstein, which ran originally for 75 minutes as a sort of TV movie, and it was written and directed by Jed Mercurio, who we remember from Invasion Earth, which we've already covered.
Yes, not too long ago we talked about Invasion Earth, and here we are with another Jed Mercurio show. And as you say, it's a sort of a one-off TV movie, and I guess we would say it's inspired by Mary Shelley's novel rather than an adaptation of Frankenstein. As it does, as we'll see when we go through it, it does take some liberties with the story, I would say, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. And Frankenstein is one of those things that certainly had an original novel that we can go back to, but there are so many different adaptations that do radically different things with the stories and the ideas.
Okay. And I'm interested because it's one of the horror archetypes which we've considered on British Invaders. So we've had vampires in Ultraviolet, although they were never actually called that, were they, Brian?
No, they weren't.
We've talked about Jekyll and Hyde when we did Stephen Moffat's Jekyll. We've had ghosts and haunted houses in the shape of M.R. James stories and more recently The Woman in Black. And now here we are with a version of Frankenstein. So all the sort of horror standards we're getting to eventually.
Yes, quite a few of them. So the setup for this particular show, in the near future, a volcanic eruption has filled the sky, it seems, with ash and produced all kinds of strange weather conditions. So the UK and maybe much of the world is now a very inhospitable place in terms of weather and climate conditions. And this team of scientists is working towards producing artificial organs for transplant. And with the climate conditions that are there, that's something that's becoming very important. So they believe that they have made a new breakthrough in growing these new organs. And in fact, what they have is what they're calling the UX project, the Universal Xenograft Project.
Yeah, that's right. It would be organs for all, I guess, sort of lab-made organs that could be transplanted into any patient. And that's what they're working on in a university research department, which is called the Windmill Institute. But this is a rather sort of creepy gothic looking department in the basement of a building in London. I think it's supposed to be London. Anyway, so there they are. And it's not at all a sort of high tech establishment. It's rather creepy and dark looking, which I suppose fits with the tone of the story. But as you say, Brian, they're working on this project, but we've had a sort of flash forward, which is right before the opening titles, which of course shows that rather than producing universal organs for transplant, they have produced something much more horrifying.
Yes, absolutely. The setting they give us in this sort of creepy basement of an old building does sort of fit with the Victorian roots, or the more gothic 19th century roots of the Frankenstein story.
Yep, absolutely. So we will run through the characters. And right up front, we have the lead scientist, Victoria Frankenstein, played by Helen McCrory, the actress who we probably best know for recently. She's been in New Doctor Who in the Vampires of Venice episode, but she also played Narcissa Malfoy. That's Draco Malfoy's mother in the Harry Potter films. And here she is as a driven scientist working on this universal xenograph project and desperate to find a cure for her dying son who needs a transplant himself. She has a young son in hospital and his illness leads her to sort of ignore and try and get around regulations as she's desperate to push on to the stage of human testing for the xenograph project.
Yes, so we have a female version of Dr. Frankenstein in this particular drama, and they never actually mention her name or mention or say the word Frankenstein in the entire show. You see it written down in the closing credits and so on, but you never actually hear it. They sort of go out of their way to refer to her as Victoria or Doctor, which is a little bit awkward, but they definitely avoid mentioning the name Frankenstein.
Yes, the F word never comes up.
Indeed. One name we almost get is another famous Frankenstein movie character, because her lab assistant is called Ed Gore, played by Benedict Wong. So a bit of a play on Igor there, but Ed Gore is the assistant who plays into things here. And there is also a colleague, Professor Andrew Waldman, played by Neil Pearson. And he sort of has the moral and ethical discussions with Victoria. So there is that dynamic coming into it from that character.
Okay. Then we have the head of the university academic team, who is, and you'll spot more names as we go along. This is Professor Jane Pretorius, played by Lindsay Duncan, who we've seen in Doctor Who, The Waters of Mars. And she initially refuses Victoria's request to start testing the xenograph project on humans. And she is quite, you know, initially seems to be opposed to any plans to take the project further at this stage. And then one more scientist, all these various doctors and professors. We have Dr. Henry Clerval, played by James Purefoy. And he is Victoria's ex-husband. And he argues with her over the treatment of their dying son, William, who's in the hospital. But he also seems to be a scientist in his own right. And as we go along in the story, we'll find a bit more about his work as well.
Yes, that's right. And if you're familiar with the original Frankenstein novel, you will recognize a few names here and there. Although in this case, unlike the novel, it's pretty definite that all of these characters are British. You don't have the sort of European feel of, you know, this one's from Switzerland and this one's from France and so on.
And then as ghost, there's one more character we have to mention, Brian.
Absolutely. There is the creature himself, played by Julian Bleach, who played Davros in the new Doctor Who. And this is very much a physical role without real dialogue and sort of a character that creeps around.
Okay, and it's a good creepy performance, which we'll come back to as we get into the story in more detail. And we'll talk a little bit about the actual look of the creature as well. So continuing with the story, we have Victoria and Henry's son, William, in hospital, and his health is deteriorating. And Victoria is desperate to get Professor Pretorius to allow her to test the xenograph project on humans. But once again, when she comes up against the brick wall, she takes the matters into her own hand and injects a sample of her son's blood into this new cell culture. And the result is a rapidly expanding mass of tissue, which they then have to move into a larger tank, or they have this very large tank in the laboratory. And things are growing fairly rapidly in there and starting to produce human tissues. And we see some of the bits and pieces that this cell culture is producing.
Yes, and we see it looks like it's approaching more than just little bits and pieces. And this rapidly scares Victoria. And she becomes discouraged and fearful about this project and tells Waldman to terminate this cell line, to stop so it doesn't get out of hand on them. But Waldman and Pretorius at that point seem to be working behind things, behind the scenes with an agenda of their own and pushing things ahead quite aggressively.
Yep, that's right. We've got some behind the scenes sort of mad scientist stuff going on. We've got this sort of cell culture, this tissue culture in a big tank, and it's all getting very strange and mysterious. And then, of course, outside, we've got these weird weather conditions, and it all builds up to, I suppose, in a way, a predictable moment with thunder and lightning, and the moment when Victoria realizes and actually gets to say the words, "It's alive." So sort of fairly famous words, certainly from the Frankenstein movies. And here they are brought out for us by Victoria, this female scientist.
Yes, absolutely. And there are lots of little references to things, and we will get into those a little bit later as we go on.
Please, Victoria, I'll call Joe to get you to safety.
You assured me that all the material for the UX was accounted for, but these figures say different.
I'm sorry.
Well, then you must have known that something could have survived.
I genuinely believed it was impossible.
Andrew, I trusted you.
And I trusted you. You thought you could control life. Instead, we've unleashed something we can't control.
So we should get into a few production notes. And starting right at the beginning, Mary Shelley, in 1818, wrote the novel Frankenstein or the Modern Prometheus. There is a famous story about a group of people deciding that each one should write a horror story, and Mary Shelley was one of those, and the result was Frankenstein or the Modern Prometheus. So from this little exercise of what should you write as a horror story, we got the ideas and the story that was Frankenstein that would be so very influential for well over a century.
Yes, that's right. That famous meeting where they all got together and decided to write horror stories, ghost stories. And as the caption at the start of this production tells us, there was apparently a volcanic eruption at the time, so they may have been seeing some strange weather conditions when Mary Shelley first came up with the story of Frankenstein.
Yes, interesting stuff. It is one of the most adapted novels that has been used for all kinds of things over the years since then.
That's right. We've had, obviously, we've had film versions, we've had stage versions, a very recent and very successful stage version directed by Danny Boyle here at the National in London. So lots of various different interpretations of Frankenstein over the years. And then here we have, perhaps appropriately, Jed Mercurio, who, as we've mentioned before, trained initially as a doctor. So he is, in fact, a doctor. And he came to sort of fame on British television for writing a series about doctors called Cardiac Arrest, which was, I suppose, a sort of unmasking of some of the stuff that went on in hospitals. And that came out in 1994. He wrote another very successful medical series called Bodies in 2004. And best known to us on British Invaders for the big budget Invasion Earth series in 1998, which we covered back in British Invaders episodes 122 and 123. When we thought the series was not entirely successful despite its huge budget, and it came at a strange time in British science fiction on television when there wasn't much else around, Brian.
Yes, that's right. The BBC at that point was, it seemed, trying to find its own way again in terms of how it should do sci-fi. But a number of years had passed by the time this comes around, and Mercurio suggested the idea of adapting Frankenstein to producer Hugh Warren, who worked on the remake of Survivors. And they took the idea to Impossible Pictures, the production company performed by Tim Haines from the Walking with Dinosaurs series, and from Space Odyssey Voyage to the Planets, which we talked about recently, and Primeval, all of these sort of computer graphics-oriented shows.
That's right, yes. I mean, again, Impossible Pictures, one of these companies that keeps coming up in our recent discussions, and they gave the go-ahead for this project. So Mercurio wrote the script, and then they took the production, in effect, to a disused London hospital, appropriately enough, where we got that very dark, gothic, gloomy look. Lots of corridors, lots of flickering lights. It all looks very retro in a way, this the first part of this TV movie, doesn't it, Brian?
Yes, definitely.
And then, of course, we've got the exteriors. As you said, we've got this volcanic eruption, which has given us dark red skies. And certainly when we see vehicles outside, we see all the cars are sort of covered in this thick volcanic ash. So everything has this sort of dark red look to the production, which I suppose, again, appropriate enough for Frankenstein and its themes and doctors doing strange and mysterious things in dark basements. So quite a dark, gloomy look to the production.
Yes, absolutely. And to go with that, they got Neil Gorton of Jellyfish Pictures to design the creature makeup for the creature itself. And he was known for working on Torchwood, Children of Earth, and Doctor Who, Waters of Mars, and also on the Sarah Jane Adventures, and Being Human as well. So that's a lot of BBC science fiction shows with plenty of interesting makeup jobs in those, for sure.
Absolutely, yes. Lots of prosthetics and various bits and pieces. And we don't often talk about the makeup and the creature sorts of features, but for this production, obviously, it's very important.
Yes, absolutely. And Julian Bleach, in fact, had about a four-hour session in makeup to become this creature for filming. And in fact, even the suit and the makeup they had some green parts on it so that Millennium FX could add some computer-generated graphics onto it to extend that.
I don't know why when we come across these sort of monster makeups, there's always 4 hours in the makeup chair. It always seems to be that same figure. That's how long it takes to put on one of these extensive prosthetic makeups, I think.
I guess so.
Anyway, yes.
So it was broadcast on ITV on October 24th in 2007.
Yes, a strange day, because if they'd waited a week, they would have got Halloween. And I would have thought it would have made an appropriate Halloween broadcast, but there you go.
Yeah, maybe that was the plan, but they had to move it for other scheduling reasons,
maybe.
Perhaps.
And it went up against a popular nature program on the BBC and also Heroes, which was running on BBC Two at that time. But it managed a respectable 3.6 million audience. However, we don't know if it was ever shown again or if it was broadcast in North America. To the best of our knowledge, it wasn't, I believe, Brian.
Yes, I'm not aware of any repeats or international broadcasts on this one.
Okay, so there it is. It's one-off, as we say, 75 minutes running time in October of 2007. And then we got, in terms of availability, we got a Region 2 DVD release. And that was labelled as the Director's Cut. And that gives you an additional 15 minutes. So we have a 90-minute running time on the Director's Cut DVD, which as an extra also features, rather strangely, the original broadcast version, but little else on the DVD itself. And that is available. That's quite cheap to buy. It's £7 on Amazon.co.uk here, and it's also available to rent on Love Film.
And there is actually no Region 1 version. Amazon.com does have the Region 2 version as an import, selling for about $19.
Okay, so a shame. Another missing Region 1 release, but at least we've got the Region 2 one to look at.
Yes, absolutely. So next time, we will discuss a little more of how the story develops, and we will talk about some of the similarities between this production and the original novel, and also some of the other adaptations. And we'll talk about some of the differences between those as well.
Okay, as ever, we'll get to our reviews and recommendations, the good and the bad of this particular production.
That's right, so there should be lots to talk about next time. You can reach us at BritishInvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.BritishInvaders.com. We are also on the Geek Culture Network, so if you go to thegeekculturenetwork.com, you can find us there. And if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find our Facebook group there for lots of fun discussions.
Yes, lots of ways to get in touch with us. And also, you can now hear us on the Voice of Geeks streaming radio at vognetwork.com. And as ever, hello to anybody who's listening to us on the Vog Network for the first time.
Yes, there are lots of ways to listen to us and get in touch with us now, which is great. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much, and until next time, this is Eamon in England also signing off.